I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Spider-Knight?
Alas, friend Spider-Man. By what sorcery doth small ceiling torch shine forth?
It's called a light bulb.
Welcome to Brattle World. I am your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Spider Knights of the Round Table, where my guests and I will discuss a much-loved subject in depth and in a round table format. And I brought somebody I haven't seen in a very long time. It's Roisin. She's back. Hello, you all right?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I thought this would be a good subject as the new film with Elizabeth Moss is out, The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
So, Blumhouse as well.
I know.
So I'm hoping it's going to be really good.
I've heard great things already. Yeah?
Have you read any reviews?
Well, no. I learn from Midsommar not to read much into it. I've seen a few tweets. I've seen like the Blumhouse team and people who worked on the film tweeting about it, and people who've seen the preview. I think they went to the premiere. Does it last?
Possibly. I've seen reviews have been popping up, so I imagine people have seen it now.
I've seen positive feedback, but I don't want to read too much into it. I don't want any spoilers. Fair enough. Blind. I've seen the trailer, and I'll let myself have that. Mm. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I've seen glimpses of stuff, and somebody said, "Oh, I think it's a suit the way they're invisible." But then I saw a thing where it was like, "Is that a spray on tan type situation?"
Yeah.
So it could be. I don't know, but all I know is it's going to be a creepy dude. Who's invisible? And that's all we need to know.
Yeah, I think we could talk about this much more later.
Yeah, but sure.
The thing that I'm looking forward to the most, from what I've seen from the trailer, is that you probably will go through the film not knowing if she's losing her mind, or if it's really happening.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
I love when films kind of do that to you.
Yeah,
what would you do?
And it's going on a kind of almost like they're in this kind of toxic, abusive relationship, and the kind of almost the PTSD of coming out of something like that, and to have that, you know, that presence and to have that power over someone and how that affects them mentally. So
exactly
that it's kind of believable that they would kind of could have potentially have a mental breakdown.
I think he offers to leave her some money as well in the will, as long as she proves herself to be mentally stable. So it's almost like a game.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a bit more.
That's what I've seen, and I'm like, okay.
Won't spoil it too much. But we're going to talk about the last creepy fella who turned himself invisible. And this is 20 years old now.
I couldn't believe it.
I'm feeling my age now. I was like, is it? Surely not. Surely we're not that old. We're going to talk about Kevin Bacon, Paul Verhoeven's Hollow Man, which I actually think is quite a good title given the character and what happens within the film.
Yes, actually, I didn't think of that.
Because he's not, you know, Kevin Bacon basically plays a scientist who's working for the government with a big team of other experts, molecular engineers or something like that, some sciencey phrase. And they're trying to basically create military applications for invisibility.
Yeah, it's like a serum, the invisibility serum or something.
I think it's irradiated as well. I think there's a bit of radiation in there. And that's basically the plot. And he, as all crazy mad scientists do, they test it on themselves.
I just said to Laurie when we watched it the other night, I was like, oh, it just reminded me of Flatliners a little bit.
It's
just scientists fucking around with things that shouldn't be fucking around with. It's not going to go well.
No. God has reasons why we shouldn't do this stuff. So, you know, if you believe in God or not, but always seems to go wrong. He tests it on himself, the whole team tests it on himself, and then they find out they can't reverse the disability. He gets locked away, he becomes a bit of a lab rat, and he starts kind of losing it. He's not the sanest of guys, he's not on the good kind of, he's already got kind of God complex.
Yes.
And a lot of other, he's the sociopath basically. But, you know, what's good about this film is you see the development gradually.
Yeah, you do. You get a couple of little hints at the beginning before he even transforms because you see him spying on his neighbour.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he tells that weird joke about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, taking advantage of Wonder Woman.
Yeah, you'll be like, okay, that's what kind of person you are, basically.
That's a good tell because I think I'd heard that joke before, but I don't know if someone had seen this movie and told me that joke when I was a kid. And I was like, that's not a nice joke.
I don't get it. Yeah. It's not funny.
But even their reactions are quite... Like the way they respond to him and the way they talk about him, you know, even that, like that it's their boss, and they, you know, they respect him. And he is a bit of a genius, though. He figures out these things, but his personality, he is a hollow man. He doesn't have a heart. Like even Elizabeth Shue's character in it, she says, you know, oh, do you want to, what's it like making love to an invisible man and stuff like that? And she's like, you were never there anyway. It would just be the same thing, you know, like he just doesn't have that caring, feeling, sensitive side of him. He just, you know, it's all a power grab. And it's what's kind of, it's quite complex film considering it is a bit of like a slasher horror jump thing.
Yeah, it is. They test on animals first, don't they?
Yes, yeah. There's a gorilla, dogs, various other things.
There's a little rat in the beginning.
The opening.
Yeah, and I forgot that happened and I was like, oh no, what's this? And so they test on all the animals. What is the animal that gets the rat in the beginning? Is it Elizabeth?
I think it's the gorilla because it looks like it gets grabbed around the throat. But kind of see the way the invisibility works, you kind of see it squish almost like that around the neck.
Yeah.
Kind of like a almost circular motion. And because I thought it was a lion initially. And I was like, because the way the way the jaws were, and I was like, I mean, it seems silly why they would test on a lion, but they've tested on dogs and everything else, so why not a lion?
Why not?
And I mean, that's a scary premise: an invisible lion.
Yeah,
make that movie. I mean, make the invisible lion movie.
Yeah, no, it's really complex, and I do really like it. I watched it first when I was quite young.
So we're talking 2000. So I'm guessing I'm around 11?
Yeah,
about 11, I'd say.
One thing we loved when we were watching it is in these late 90s, early noughties kind of horror thrillers, they play just really generic metal music. Like you always see the characters driving around and I'm like, yeah.
Well, I said to myself, he listens to new metal, so he must be evil. He's the villain of the piece, you know.
But I think it's a really good cast, to be honest. I love Josh Brolin. I think it's just because he's from the Goonies.
It doesn't love Josh Brolin. I mean, it's Thanos, isn't he? So,
Elizabeth Shue, Greg Grunberg. I know him from Heroes, but he's done quite a few little bits of horror. Actually, I've seen him.
Yeah, he kind of pops up every now and again. I think he's very much in that kind of niche geek market.
It's his casting type, isn't it?
He's in the latest Abrams Star Wars films. So if you keep your eye out, you can see him kind of, he'll say the odd line or he'll pop up. I think he's a pilot. I think he's one of the rebel pilots.
Oh, amazing.
If you keep your eye out for him in those films, you'll see him. But yeah, I really like him. I dig his, he's quite young in this, actually. He's quite youthful. And he's kind of has the most youthful exuberance. Everyone else is kind of just like a bit of a nerdy scientist or a medical person. But he's kind of just like, almost like, you know, the roadie.
Student,
yeah, he's kind of a roadie-esque type guy.
And there's Joey Slotnick, who we kept saying he's just a cross between Paul Giovanni and Judge Reinhold from Santa Claus. Because at first we were like, is that him? Because we've not seen it for so long.
Yeah, that's the guy with the curly hair.
No, but great cast.
Yeah, it was. I think it's what's helpful as well. Is
obviously Kevin Bacon as well.
We'll get to him. Don't worry, we'll get to him. But I think the rest of the, like, Kevin Bacon is the best thing in the film, without a doubt. Shadow of a doubt, he is the best thing in this movie.
Yeah, he's probably only in it for about a third.
Technically.
Of the movie, really.
Technically, you barely see him in it. Yeah. It's like a Batman Returns scenario where Michael Keaton was barely in it. I'm just picturing, I was watching some behind the scenes stuff they realized that initially when they were filming, obviously they had these invisibility scenes where, you know, they don't know where he is and a chair will move and things like that. They didn't have him on set. They didn't have Kevin Bacon on set.
Oh, right.
So, and when they were filming it, they realized that the actors' performances were a bit wooden or a bit stale. So what they did was, like, they said, we need Kevin Bacon on set, even
in around with them a
bit. Yeah, just to, you know, stand behind the camera. Or but what Verhoeven did, which I thought was really clever, was they had speakers in the room and they played his voice.
Ah, so 1 minute he'd be
from one direction
and the other he'd be across the room. That's really clever.
So the actors were responding in, you know, in real time to these kind of, they're like, where is that voice coming from?
That's
so
really clever. You know,
so they're freaking out like, whoa, whoa, and all that. And it's actually, he's actually doing it for real and kind of making that voice travel.
That's really clever. Because we were wondering about whether, because I liked the CGI. Do you know when they strap, they do the blood test on the invisible gorilla? And I was like, well, the band and the needle, everything, it looked quite legit. It was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, CGI wasn't too bad.
They spent, so this is one of the highest budget for this movie. It's one of the highest for any horror movie at the time. I don't know about now. I think maybe adjusted for inflation.
Yeah.
But it was about 95 million. Ooh. 50 million was spent on the special effects. So we're talking like top level at the time special effects. It was even nominated for an Oscar.
Was it?
Yeah, but lost to Gladiator.
Oh, well.
But
yeah.
I can't remember the special effects in Gladiator. Can you think of something where I'm like, oh, wow.
Maybe the animals were.
Yeah, yeah, I imagine.
Russell Crowe really fought.
Yeah. Yes, really fought. To be honest, he punches everything. Yeah, like, he's always in trouble for punching things, Russell Crowe. So he probably would punch a lion. It's like Conan, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, just punching a camel. Just, you know. Punches the camel in that film just straight out. So,
we were trying to figure out. So, I don't know if you've seen this from watching behind the scenes, but when Kevin Bacon turns, he has his transformation into Hollow Man.
The Hollow Man.
Was he there? Is he in a morph suit? Is it green screen?
It's a bit of everything, really.
Is it?
The effects they wanted for various different things. So the bits where you see him when he's in smoke, or when he's on fire, or various other things, where he's covered in the blood, blood. Certain effects they had to basically, you know, we have these green suits now. Yeah. That's kind of the staple of CGI.
Yeah.
Everybody wears them, you know, like. Yeah, you know it. Yeah. Andy Serkis, all that sort of stuff. So this is kind of that kind of tech. So I think for the regular scenes, they wore green and they even gave him green contacts and painted his face green as well. So a big Lycra suit. Then I think in water, he had to be completely black. So black contacts, black face paint. Fully black suit as well.
Okay, so he did work
a
lot in this film.
Yeah, it wasn't just like, it's just like, this movie is great.
sat by the camera.
I'll be in my trailer.
Lines.
But no, he was doing it. So the bit like where he goes in the swimming pool, he's in the swimming pool in the suit, various things. The green was for flesh or any gore or anything like that. The anatomy. Black was for the water because if they wore green because it's quite luminous, there would be reflection of like the bubbles in the water and stuff like that. So they used black for that, and then blue was for smoke or the fire extinguisher and things like that. So they would use different effects required different.
Yeah.
So it's basically just, if you watch the behind the scenes, you're just seeing Kevin Bacon dressed up like Kermit the Frog, one of the Blue Man Group, and then just Peter Pan's shadow.
Yeah.
You know, just all of, and to, credit to the actors because they do treat it like it is an horrific, you know.
I mean, because this is the thing. I know he's got this invisibility serum pumped through him, but he almost does get a little bit superhuman.
Yeah. Towards the end.
Like,
They're knocking him out. They're setting him on fire.
Yeah. They put all the elements
just like
possible
stab him,
still won't die, it takes a lift or like fall.
There is talk in real life of people that have, you know, severe kind of mental health problems, you know like on a psychotic level they do become like almost superhuman,
so like adrenaline,
yeah, exactly, they almost
fight or fly,
yeah, and they just and you can't, yeah, they are, they do appear stronger, or people in, you know, this, you know, if a woman has a child trapped under a car, she'll find she can lift the car. So I think it's somewhat believable, but he does become a little bit of a slasher villain within this. But
definitely.
But it is a horror film, so I kind of don't mind that. And I think the creepiest elements for me is when he wears the rubber latex mask.
Yeah,
and the eyes are gone, and he kind of almost looks like a burn victim.
Yeah, and he scares the children, doesn't he, in the car?
Oh yeah,
I'm like, Mom, drive. Yeah. I mean, you would, but that's when he's starting to. We were talking about this and saying. I think I would play pranks.
Yeah.
I would, mm-hmm. if I had that power. You definitely, like, mess with people a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But he just takes it above and beyond.
Too far, yeah.
Way too far. Yeah.
I think there are certain superpowers which are kind of inherently creepy.
Yeah.
I think especially if you give them to a male character, I think they do become inherently creepy. Like, I can think of a few, like, comic book characters specifically. So the Purple Man from Jessica Jones, he has kind of mind control. So, you know, in that he kind of makes women have sex with him.
So
and
makes fun.
Exactly. Of that power. And there's a character in the comics called Marvel Comics called Star Fox, who he emits kind of pheromones and can make, no, that's it, he can manipulate your brain chemistry.
Yeah.
And the pleasure centers in your brain.
Okay.
So he can kind of manipulate people to, like, orgasm, for example, and things like that, because he can, yeah. He's actually Thanos' brother, believe it or not, but there's reasons they've not introduced him, because there's some creepier elements to him, and that being the main one. And yeah, I think just general kind of mind control and invisibility itself, I think, because I think the old school thing would be, like, the male fantasy is like, oh, if I'm invisible, I'll go and stare at naked women, you know, that whole kind of awful kind of scenario.
Yeah.
But that, obviously, in this film, they go, okay, you get exactly what you want. You get this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, yeah, they show you the absolute kind of negative idea of that. Like, this is something you wouldn't do. Like, you go, yeah, you'd mess with people, like you said, but you wouldn't go as far as he goes.
Because I think he gets almost every female character in the film, pretty much. Because he what's the character called with the short red hair?
Oh, I can't remember.
So he gets her when she's sleeping.
Yeah.
And I was really trying to concentrate to see how people reacted, because I thought I'd be interested to see someone say, I think this happened to me.
Yeah.
This was 20 years ago when, obviously,
years
and years before the Me Too movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that had started to be addressed. Mm. Yeah, so he gets hurt, and then obviously Elizabeth Shue has a dream that it happens to her.
Yes, she does, yeah.
And then he gets the neighbour, who is it, Rona Mitra?
Yeah, yeah.
Ali G in the house.
Ali G in the house, yeah.
Yeah, so that's all I really know what's wrong.
Turn it to vibrate and finish yourself.
That's exactly what Laurie said. But yeah, so I think that scene, obviously it's horrific enough anyway, but the fact he messes with her, in the beginning, he wants her terrified to begin with, so he messes with the mirror.
Mm.
And, like, it's one thing just to do it, when she's asleep or something like that.
To
get her terrified, it's that God complex. Mm. It's having that power, and
over somebody.
That's what, like, rapist majority
have, really. Yeah.
That's what they want. They want, like, fear and struggle, etc. So it's just, we're just disgusted.
Horrific, yeah.
Yeah, it's so bad, but it does kind of make you think about how you would react if you're put in that situation if you were given that power. Because we were talking about the Stanford prison experiment in the 70s, and they gave the students roles of prisoners and guards. And
yeah, there's been a few films, I think, about it as well. Yeah,
there's been quite a few. I did a play by a lovely writer called Mark Reed, called Better Brutality Than Boredom, and it's about a group, well, two teenagers that get access to these three men that all have chips in, like, the back so we can control what they're doing. And it starts off, like, just messing around, a bit of fun, pranking,
but
it ends up quite lethal, basically. And it just makes you think, as humans, is there a reason why we don't have these kind of powers? Like, that where it'd go eventually? Because you mentioned earlier, he kind of gets stuck. They can't get him back.
Yeah.
But what I couldn't realise why, because he managed to get the gorilla back.
Yeah.
Do you think he was interested in returning back to normal?
I think initially, yes. I think he wanted to prove that his experiment was a complete success. That he is.
Because they were doing it on the sly as well, weren't they? Because they lied to the Pentagon.
Yeah, how could you lie to the Pentagon? Apparently, that was the Pentagon they filmed outside of as well.
I was thinking that because you could see the White House in one of the shots. Do you know, when they go for the celebratory meal, you could see the White House in the background. I was like, oh, that's where we are. But yeah, so obviously they'd lied. I think they wanted to try and get away with it.
Yeah.
Before they found out.
Yeah, exactly. Because basically, once you've... It's Sebastian Cain, I think his character, Kevin Bacon's character is called. He basically says, once they know how to do it, we're done and dusted. Yeah, they'll just get scientists to do it. You know, just get any old person. They won't get the research people involved.
Yeah,
we have to keep this to ourselves. This is a crazy discovery, but we have to, for the time being, know that it works. You know, practice what we have to do and know it, you know, inside out before we let anybody else have it. Because again, once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't put it back.
No.
So that's what he wants. He wants, and that's why he uses himself as a test subject, because I don't think anybody else would agree to it.
Well, yeah.
But I think later on, yeah, they get the gorilla back, but then it's not without like issue. Like the gorilla almost dies, and then he almost dies when they're trying to revert, and he's like, something wrong, there's something wrong. And then he kind of comes, they have to kind of paddle him and it just kind of reverts, I think. He kind of just becomes more visible because he kind of goes halfway there and then starts retreating again. And I think that's when it becomes an issue. And I think when she takes... Elizabeth Shue's character is a really strong character in this.
Yeah, she is.
And like, she's very...
Take
control. She's, you know, she's up there in levels of intelligence. You know, she doesn't put up with his shit.
Yeah.
You know, she absolutely knows he's not a good guy. Mm-hmm. He's not the best guy. He's obsessed with her.
I think someone says to him at one point, like, is this the serum or is this you?
Yeah.
And
it's interesting because it's like, because the serum could affect him mentally.
Yeah,
I think they say that as well. It could start affecting his mind. So he, you know.
Well, had that side of him not already been there in the first place, would it have gone that bad?
Yeah, do we know? It's like, because there's hints that he's not a great guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like he's like homicidal or you know, a rapist or anything like that.
I think the first time you see him when he hurts something, is it the dog? Obviously the poor woman who's asleep
he
grabs.
Yeah,
she obviously comes first, but then there's the dog, which used to terrify me. I remember watching it as a child, and I didn't see how they switched the real dog for stuffed toy filled with
blood, I guess.
Yeah.
Apparently, they were actually an animal protection agency was so concerned with that scene that they had it investigated, and Paul Verhoeven had to show them like behind the scenes shots of him.
I mean, it looked pretty real.
Yeah, he grabs the real dog and it's like,
and he's like, oh, I'm not gonna hurt.
It goes off screen ever so slightly, and then wham, like slams into the cell.
Yeah,
and it's just blood everywhere.
And that's the first sign of sociopaths when they're children, if they're hurting animals.
Yeah, that's a big sign.
So maybe that was like why that scene was put in there. Like, oh no, he's definitely.
He's not a great guy, but I mean, he's sucking people's nipples while they're asleep.
Yeah,
you know, that's you know, it's before the animal, before that even happens, he's doing that. So I'm like, that's not good.
Yeah,
that's not a good thing. But I think there's something about the anonymity as well. Like we see it online a lot. We see all these trolls and stuff that have anonymity that can say whatever the hell they want, however they want, without any repercussions, because they have some form of anonymity. That's either a fake profile or what have you, or they use an avatar or something, and they can say and do what they want, and they can devastate people's lives and their mental health and stuff, regardless of, you know. But then there was a really good like meme I saw the other day. It was basically this is social media, and it was two sets of dogs on either side of a gate, and the gate is like electronically opening, and these dogs are having at it, like each other through the gate, and the gate slowly starts to open, and the second the gate is fully open, all the dogs run up the opposite direction. And I was like, that is social
it
media
is,
if you put it,
it
you put people face to face, you wouldn't speak like that, you wouldn't say those things, you wouldn't be as blatantly disrespectful. And I think that this taps into that a little bit.
Yeah, no, it does.
And the kind of there's a bit of like, there's a lot of that kind of voyeurism as well, like, if these walls could talk, what's behind them, you know, I can get in, I can do this, I can see these sort of things. And it's quite a fascinating film. I mean, obviously, it's very much like a horror entertainment kind of, you know, it has all those trappings, but deeper and more introspective things you could think about, and about the human condition, and what would you do, if you had that ability, you know, and how would you use it?
Like people you know, do you know what I mean?
Would you take revenge on somebody for something, you know, who knows? Like, it depends how you were brought up, or, you know, your mental condition. morning, maybe. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I do with invisibility, really. I can't really think. I mean, spy, I guess. You could be a really good spy.
Good name. Like,
industrial saboteur. Some,
politicians I'd love to spy on.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good.
But
I mean, you'd be bloody cold, though, wouldn't you? You'd be walking around naked all the time. I'd be freezing.
That's it. Like, what if it wears off?
Yeah. One day it's like, I think there's certain films where it does kind of come back and forth.
So before we talk about Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
More, when he transformed, I think I wanted a little bit more from the reaction from everybody. I know you've seen the animals. Mm. But I think to see a human start, because he starts, it looks like convulsing. He's burning first, doesn't it? And
it's almost like a cigarette burn.
When it gets to like the muscles, I really wanted, because I was just waiting for some more of a reaction, but they're kind of all just like amazed. And it's like, yeah, great. Yeah, you probably would be amazed. But I really wanted someone just to be like,
yeah, throw up or something. I'll tell you what, I do like the bit where he throws up and it's invisible.
Yeah,
I thought
in the toilet.
I thought that was
very clever.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I like the eyelids thing as well.
Yes, it's these little details that you don't think about. Wouldn't that drive, you fucking crazy?
Yeah. That alone.
You couldn't.
Forget the rest of the stuff, just not being able to sleep.
Like, so he gets the sunglasses. So this is the thing as well. It's like, well, okay, he's a bad man in the first place, but then chuck a load of this at him and the power of invisibility. Would anyone just go a bit mental?
Yeah.
You just don't know.
I think, and that's what I think it does best is it does it. It's a nice arc. It's not like I'm invisible and I'm mental. You know, it's a gradual. Yeah. I think Kevin Bacon sells it really well.
Yeah, he does.
He, like we said, it's this gradual arc, and he starts off, he's a bit of a dick. He's basically just like,
lad,
I love myself, I'm sexy, I'm brilliant, you know, absolute arrogance.
Yeah.
And that's the arrogance that comes to play when he says to the military, he's like, no, we haven't cracked it just yet, because that's born of pure arrogance. In a way, you know, arrogance would be, I did it, but also the he wants to keep it himself, he wants to keep the thing, because he's special now, he doesn't want to lose that specialness, and then becoming invisible makes him even more special. You know, like the first person that's ever, you know, they say oh, we've done seven, he's been asleep for 17 hours and we've got 3 lifetimes worth of research just here alone, just in these few hours, you know, that could be studied for the rest of time. They'll all go up in smoke anyway.
Literally.
That's the only, I think that's one of the only shames of the film, was the ending's a bit kind of weak.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the explosion would have really only been contained to that one room.
Yeah.
Up the corridors. Yeah. Up the lift.
The traveling explosions. Yeah. Kind of tunnels.
What acid was it?
Oh, it's nitroglycerin. Oh, they say, it's nitro. So it's blowing stuff up. I love how casually, like, I do quite love how casually he goes to blow everything up. He's like, do-do-do-do-do. Like, just like, it's so casual.
Like, and 5 minutes.
And then smashes the keyboard. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, he goes to town in that room. Yeah. Completely
brilliant.
Destroyed by the end. What was his plan? What was he planning to do after that?
What do you think?
Like, I don't know.
I mean, you could probably get away with living like a look, because he looks a bit like a burn victim.
Yes.
So I think you could probably pass for the most part and go, you know, if you wear like a cap and some glasses, you could kind of probably get away with a little bit of not being seen. But obviously, you know.
Maybe he was just thinking of like being a spectacle. That's why I imagine like a lot of people would want fame, money, etc.
But then maybe he could have been like a industrial saboteur, or, you know, he can steal secrets. Yeah, steal secrets, basically. Things like that. Because that would be handy. And, you know, he could be hired by, you know, he could be an assassin. I mean, there's a lot of handy kind of, there's a lot of things you could do. Well, now we're thinking about it, actually, I'd be an assassin. I'd be a cold-blooded assassin. So I'm just thinking these off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So anybody out there who's invisible, there's some ideas for you. I think Kevin Bacon's, I think, is a really like unique actor.
He is, yeah.
And
it's for his EE commercials. Is it?
Oh, EE. Yeah. I thought you were going EE. Some of his films are bad. EE. No, his EE commercials are pretty cheesy.
He knows.
he's never afraid to take risks.
No.
Because I know for a fact he played at least two or three paedophiles in films.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen The Woodsman?
No, I've not seen The Woodsman. I was just thinking of Mystic River, but he wasn't.
No, I don't think he was a... No, I don't think he was the... He's the paedophile in Sleepers. Have you seen Sleepers? No, it's fair enough. Good cast.
Yeah, no, it's on my list. I've got a few... Kevin Bacon, I think, didn't he start in Friday the 13th? Is that his first film?
Yes, very first film, yeah.
Obviously, he did Footloose and everything, but when he... I love the horror films that he popped back up in, like Stir of Echoes is probably one of my favourite films.
I need to watch that. You know, I own it, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, I think it came out around the same time as The Sixth Sense, and I was too young to go see it either, but my mum said that it just got completely overshadowed by The Sixth Sense because that was such a phenomenal... just sensation of a film.
Yeah.
But the Stir of Echoes is really good. Mm. It's a really good little ghost story.
I'm definitely going to watch that one now. Definitely.
Yeah, he's fantastic in it. And yeah, like even if he did like, I think, one film a year or something. He's a bit of a Toni Collette. Like, he'll be, like, I like how he can choose. Yeah, she was in The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that is a quite... Like, you can go through all these different genres, and I think that's a sign of a good actor that they can share. They're not just like, you know, like Matthew McConaughey just did romantic comedies for about 10 years. Like, that was it. That's all he did.
I wonder if people, you know, if he just got kind of typecast as that, so he couldn't be seen.
That as well, yeah. But I think, Kevin Bacon's really, there's a great film he made called Death Sentence.
Oh.
I think it's from the director of Saw or something like that. And it's basically like a revenge movie.
Yeah.
It was initially a sequel to Death Wish. It's based on, yeah.
Oh, is it?
I think Death Sentence is the official book to sequel to Death Wish. But they kind of made it its own thing. And he goes around, and it's one of the most bleak kind of vigilante movies I've ever seen in my life. It's really,
oh, really?
Dark and depressing. And he really, like, kind of, it's almost like Hollow Man. It kind of just takes over his life, and that's it. Just like loses all sense of what he's doing and why he's doing it.
What's The Woodsman?
The Woodsman. So The Woodsman is basically, he is a convicted paedophile. Kevin Bacon plays a convicted paedophile who has come out of jail, and he's trying to recover. He's trying to not be a paedophile. Yeah. And it was a hard, me and Nathan's brother Matthew watched it, and we were like, should we just do it? I was like, okay, I think I'm in a good place to watch this.
That's what I think I'm in a good feels, but I've still not seen Prisoners yet.
Yeah.
I've just heard.
You want to be in a strong mental place to deal with that.
I'm a bit stressed right now. I've got a lot on my plate.
Yeah.
I can't stick that on.
Yeah. I'm about to cry, so maybe not. That one's not for me right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very much a hard watch because it's a sympathetic character who's also a paedophile.
Yeah.
And he's the protagonist.
Yes. We're following him.
And his real life wife plays his girlfriend in it.
Yeah,
I think probably might be because it would have been hard to get somebody in to play against. Maybe it's a difficult subject to even broach.
Have you seen their daughter? She's an actress as well.
Yes.
She reminds me a little bit of Linda Blair. Very dark eyes.
Actually, no. I'm thinking of Uma Thurman's daughter.
Oh,
Ethan Hawke's daughter.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of her.
Oh, they're all in films. Oh,
yeah. Why not? Why couldn't I be born to somebody famous?
Yeah, basically.
Nepotism. Damn nepotism. He sells the entire movie. If you hate everything else about the movie, you'll come out liking Kevin Bacon, even though he is a horrific human being in this. It's done in a very entertaining, kind of cheesy way. Kind of a bit like Freddy Krueger. He's kind of like, you know, he's a child murderer and all this horrible.
He's charismatic.
He's quite charismatic as a villain, yeah. I think there was a line in it where he's like, it just made me laugh, and he was just like, I always knew you were a bitch. And I was just like, he just goes to like hit her, and I was like, I don't know why that's so funny, but it's just like, I always knew you were a bitch. And just goes to crack Elizabeth Shue's head open.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Oh, there were some funny moments.
Yeah.
I think they had to throw some of that in, because otherwise you'd be like, huh.
it would be a bit bleak, a bit grim.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of humour to be found in it, and they make jokes. I like the bit where the girl goes to the toilet and she hears like the door go, and she's like, just gonna put on my infrared goggles.
Oh, I hated that she went first.
Yeah, she was good. I liked her.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets the tubing, doesn't he? He gets the, like, the intravenous kind of tubing.
What were the deaths then? So he strangles her.
He, Grunberg gets choked. And then he gets dropped, and his head goes right on that.
Like Final Destination. Yeah.
That's a nasty one.
He gets a crowbar.
He gets from behind.
This is when I started going, and I think it is a horror.
Maybe just.
It's not just a thriller, because you see it in everything. It's not like, oh, what's going to happen? It's...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of gore to it, especially like the invisibility. If you're looking for gore, you're going to see, you know, I'm sure you see like a digital, you know, Kevin Bacon's penis as well. Like if you want Kevin Bacon penis, you've got it all there. So, you know, there's a fair bit of stuff going on. And again, when it takes that final turn into the final act, it does become like slasher territory. It's not just creepy, weird, and, you know, disturbing.
The clever idea when she has the bags of blood and she's like, right.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
Can chuck them all over, but
he's already behind her. Yeah, because I was watching it and I was like, there's a massive pack all the way behind you. So I don't know if you've... It's clever though.
She needed more time.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of liked her a little bit. She was quite a pointed kind of individual, but she was very much like caring about the animals and their treatment, and you know, because he jokes about, he doesn't really like her, does he? He probably likes the least.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I'll just chop the ape's brain up, and we'll see what's going on. She's like, no, don't you do that. So, but yeah.
What happens to the
gorilla?
I'm sure she's called Liz.
Elizabeth? Isabel. The female gorilla.
Yes.
Queen Kong.
In my head, I thought I remembered from back when I first watched it that the gorilla got out and got him. Mm. I thought that's how they escaped, was the gorilla got out.
Okay. Maybe it was, that would have been interesting.
That's what I was thinking. But they
Invisible
know.
Man versus...
They think he's still like around. I mean, it'd be like... easy to film. It'd just be the camera going one way, camera going the other way. There's nothing going on. It's just here.
Scotch. It sounds brutal. if it tours into the skin, the blood would, you know, splatter on both of them. So that would be good.
I don't think I must have just imagined that.
Have you seen
The Animal's Revenge?
Have you seen The Boys? Oh, yeah. It's on Amazon. It's based on a comic book, and it's about this group of guys. Because all the superheroes are really awful people, like, you know, very much like Kevin Bacon in this. So there's a group of these guys that are underground, and they're trying to bring the superheroes down. And one of them is, I think it's called Transparent or Transparency or something. So he,
is he right through you?
Yeah, something like that. He's got like indestructible skin as well. So the way they decide to destroy him is by shoving like an explosive up his bum.
That is perfect.
Something like that. But I've not seen many. I think I've seen one or two episodes, but I need to watch the whole thing. So there's a great bit where they're fighting in like a video store, and they're absolutely getting destroyed, and then he just spits blood on his face, and he's like, oh, and then he's like, right, now I've got you. Dush, 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 dush. Keeps just spitting blood at him till he's like absolutely covered. So it's really, really, really cool. Very, very, very brutal, and very kind of, because it opens with this guy who's with his girlfriend. He's like, let's get married. And then the super, super fast guy is on drugs, and he runs right through her, and she just disintegrates. That's how it starts.
Right. Okay.
And then he joins these guys and goes, yeah, I want my revenge, because I love that. Because he's just holding her hands. That's all that's left is her hands. Yeah, it's pretty grim. It's pretty grim.
God, what's that remind you of? Oh, I think it's the end of, I don't want to tell you actually.
Oh, spoilers.
No.
Okay.
All right.
Can you tell me what it's from? Without spoil it.
Well, I don't tell you who it happens to. So okay. I guess, the film Ready or Not.
Ready or Not. Oh, I watched it the other night. Don't worry. It's not spoiling a thing. Yeah.
Brilliant. Running away. Smaller bird.
I literally made that joke before it happened. And I was because I was like, oh, yeah, here we go.
Wouldn't it be funny?
And I was like, oh, wait, they did it. Amazing.
It was really, because I thought it was just going to be the,
nothing's happened.
But I liked how they did it.
Yeah, because I didn't think it'd be like a, I thought it would just be like a family tradition type thing, and no other kind of implications.
But then there's this kind of element.
Yeah,
there actually is a curse.
Mm, so. Yeah, but I can imagine there's going to be kind of more maybe sequels to that, or like other families that do it. Maybe.
I think I couldn't say following Samara Weaving.
Yeah.
Anymore.
I think her story's done. Yeah. Yeah. But she was fantastic. Yeah. She's so good. I didn't know she was related to Hugo Weaving.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, yeah. She's like his niece or something.
Where's my favorite
nepotism? It's all this nepotism. Stop nepotism in acting. Stop it. It's not fair for anybody else. Not fair. Nobody's got money. These poor actors.
So have you read into any of the Invisible Man?
The new film.
Yeah.
New film. Not much. Again, I've seen the odd kind of trailer or clip. It looks good. I really like her. I think she'll be great in it. Have you seen the original Invisible Man with Claude Rains?
No.
One of part of the kind of
the first.
Yeah. So this is like 1930 something. Claude Rains, who was an actor who he's in Casablanca as well and various other things. They hired him because of his voice, but they actually thought he was a poor actor, but they loved his voice so much. They were like, we're going to give you acting lessons. And the special effects are really, really good for even because he's like, there's a bit where he's got bandages and goggles on and all this sort of stuff. And his hair's popping out.
I've seen the images. Yeah.
And he basically, these people burst in. He's like, you want to see? And he's unwrapping the bandages.
And there's nothing there.
Yeah, there's nothing there. It looks amazing. It looks so, so good. But he went on to be, obviously, like, he got trained and was, ends up in Casablanca, so he can't be too bad, can he? But he's really, really good. And the sequel was Vincent Price who played that character.
Of course it was.
Of course, because he's got the great voice as well.
Yeah.
He's got the great creepy voice. So there you go.
I'm trying to think of Kevin Bacon. Would you say that Kevin Bacon's got a creepy voice?
Oh, yeah, when he turns it on, yeah. When he really turns it on. When he's like, I liked it. He can. I think that's the thing is that he can go from playful and charming to like diabolical in like a split second.
Like,
yeah, you're like, oh God, you're creepy and weird.
Yeah,
I'm God, and he thinks he's God. Yeah, and he's like trying to put his hand up Elizabeth Shue's skirt and things like that. And you're like, yeah, come on, and all this sort of stuff. It's horrible.
Goosebumps.
It's very, very much the kind of the stereotypical like toxic male, or basically is what he is. And 20 years prior, before we were all very woke, but he's still horrible. He's still the villain of the piece. Luckily, he's not the hero of the piece.
Yeah.
Without he's the protagonist. He's the protagonist and kind of the villain, I guess, in this.
Yeah.
But I think it's a fantastic film. Do you think the effects hold up 20 years on?
I'd say they would. I think sometimes now when I watch films with CGI, you can really tell it's there. It's almost like it's too detailed.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the thing, but I'm like, it just looks cartoon-like almost in some films now. Mm. But no, I think the special effects definitely...
Mm.
I think
what another thing they did was they did a full body scan of Kevin Bacon down to his like capillaries, like veins, you name it, like every little detail. They literally did like a full body map of his body, and then after the film, donated it to science so they could study kind of bodies.
No. Did you find any more in behind the scenes footage?
I learned a few things about like, because Paul Verhoeven obviously is quite famous for a lot of like his films kind of have a kind of a describe as kind of hyper reality. It's almost a little bit theatrical. Some of the acting in this is very much like some people wouldn't necessarily react like that, or that's not how people talk. There's a lot of sciencey jargon, like, oh, the quantum phase shift isn't applying 100% and the reduction rate is not. It's just like generic-y science mumbo jumbo that's it's not real science.
I do love the old looking at them on these old computers as well, just like typing away, and it's just like a magic computer,
like that keyboard, that massive old keyboard and stuff.
That was not ever real.
That's not a thing.
Is it Criminal Minds where she has the amazing computer? They're like, we just find me the DNA of this man who worked somewhere. She's like,
CSI. They're like, they've got like all these screens.
High-tech screens.
It's not real. It's not real.
Yeah.
It's all sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
So Paul Verhoeven, he's famous for directing some of my favorite films and also some of my least favorite films. RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls. It's kind of a cult favorite.
It is.
Yeah,
it's a humongous cult favorite.
It's very quotable. Yes. It's very quotable. One of my favorites from that is, "You got to step on everybody to get to the top." And I was like, sure. If your top is, you know, walking down, having a big feathery gown on, sure. And with your boobs out. Who knows? But this film was, because a lot of his films have kind of political satire in, like RoboCop, it's full of Total Recall. Starship Troopers especially is full of, like, you know, join the USA, kind of very much like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. And it's like making fun of that. But this is the time we went, all right, I'm going to step away from that. I'm not going to do that anymore, because they kind of become cult classics, but they're not necessarily a blockbuster success.
Yeah.
Like Basic Instinct was, and RoboCop and a few others were like big successes, but not like blockbuster level.
Consistently.
This was a huge, huge success. Wow. So he got what he wanted. And it's less about, there's not like any political allegory or anything like that in this. It's basically just scientist goes mad.
Yeah.
You know, does evil stuff. It's a pretty simple premise, but the reviews are quite bad for it. Yeah, apparently. And it kind of depressed him a little bit. And he took about 6 years off filmmaking, I think. And he went back to the Netherlands. And now he's basically given up Hollywood. Like Hollywood, he just doesn't want to do Hollywood films anymore. Doesn't like it. And he's a bit of a mad guy. He's a bit of like a, you know, kind of, they say in the behind the scenes kind of thing, they go, Kevin Bacon says, when you're playing a mad scientist, it's good to have one on set.
Yeah.
So he's talking about Paul Verhoeven's direction. But he basically kind of just does, he did one called The Black Book for Germany. He did a film, and he did another film called L, which is kind of a kind of revenge movie about a woman who gets assaulted and she goes out and kind of takes her revenge. That's apparently quite good. But yeah, he seems to do more his own thing and in a European. I've not seen any of his foreign language films, but I would like to kind of give them a try.
Yeah.
But I think it's a real shame, because I think Paul Verhoeven was a really unique voice in Hollywood. Like, you know, how many big name, like, Netherlands directors do you get? You know, can you name another one? Probably not. So, and I think it's a real shame that we lost him. And he was a unique talent, but I think I want to kind of dip into his more kind of obscure kind of cinematography, because I love, like, RoboCop's like one of my favorite films ever. Anyway, just for everything about it. It's just a lot of people love it just because it's so weird and wacky. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he kind of fell away, and it is a shame. But as long as he's happy doing his thing, why not? You know, I think probably maybe, you know, Showgirls had a hand in that maybe as well. You know, but
that is just a humongous cult film, especially in the LGBTQ
community. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Like, it's just massive. So quotable, and
it's trashy, isn't it? It's really trashy.
I think it's because it is what it is. I think that's why it's been so successful.
They get like a fan base, like the LGBT community can really grab onto that. They grab onto like the John Waters films,
but it's just,
you know, John Waters is big. Yeah, there you go. And like, you know, some horror films. Like, I was watching Friday the 13th Part 7, a documentary on that, and they call it Fri-Gay the 13th, because there's a lot of kind of, I think the lead is gay. It was openly gay. And I think there was a couple of other cast members that were at least bi or lesbian or gay within the cast as well. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And like, and we talked about, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 as well.
Yeah,
we talked about that last time. But yeah, I think you know, there are fan bases out for these films. I think when they glom onto them, you know, that's it. Like Rocky Horror, like that's now a huge thing. That's not even cult anymore, I'd argue. It's so mainstream now.
Yeah,
that you can't even get away from it. Like, everybody loves Rocky Horror.
I heard someone say that the new Cats movie was like this generation's Rocky Horror. Please, fuck off. Surely not.
Have you seen it?
I have not yet. No,
I went to see Star Wars instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I
felt so bad as well for all the hard work that went into it. And just, fuck no. Whoever was like, I don't know, production managing. Was probably fired.
Yeah, I think so. Like, must have been somebody.
How did it get, I don't
but
know.
But I'll be honest, the musical has got nothing to it. There is no plot to Cats. It is basically, I'm a cat.
Sometimes meow, meow, meow.
Yeah, and
sometimes
that's it.
Sometimes we stay alive a little bit longer.
It was based on a set of poems by T.S. Eliot, and they just went, musical, sure. And so there's no story there anyway. So to make a film about it doesn't make much sense. And the fact that they had, you know, Jason Derulo and James Corden in it put me right off.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought, yeah, nobody likes them. If you're a fan, we apologize, but that's our opinion. I tell you, what do you think of the score for the film?
Well, I mentioned the lovely generic metal music. Majority of I was like, oh, it's Blair Witch 2. Yeah. When it started. But yeah. No, I think the score was quite good, to be honest. I'm trying to think of a specific point that comes to mind. I think just any time.
I think when he's invisible and when he's creeping about.
When he's got the mask on, I think. Because doesn't he? I know he goes. He just fucks with people.
Yeah.
He almost like plays with the noises he can make himself.
It's like someone farted in the room. It wasn't me. It definitely. Maybe that's the trick I would play. I would go into a room. I would fart loudly, and then watch everybody else blame each other. That would be my invisible thing. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, that's
It's done in fact by Jerry Goldsmith, who's one of my favourite kind of musicians, composers, whatever you call them. But yeah, I think it's really creepy, and it's quite subtle as well.
Yeah.
It's not over the top, and it doesn't really necessarily sound like one of his scores. I think that kind of, it's a nice kind of layer to the film that it kind of needs, which I thought was quite nice. You can really hear the strings when like the action hits. It's like, yeah. It's almost Psycho, like ring ring. That cool. So yeah. Oh, gotta love Psycho. So there's a reason we still.
I jump every time. Do you know when the detective walks up to the top of the stairs and gets hit in the face? Mm. I jump out of my skin, and every time it's perfectly timed. Honestly,
is that when he goes down the stairs?
Yeah, he's like walking backwards.
Yeah. That bit. Yeah. I love that bit. It's I always
and the bit where at the end when. He obviously wasn't saying, he's like, surprise, it's me. And
then, Mummy!
Yeah. And then he's just, it's just so disturbing. He's like whining and wringing his neck like that, and the wig flips off.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, my goodness. But yeah, no, it's brilliant. Even the monologue at the end.
Yeah.
And that they even talk about, was it really, it's not actually him, he's lost his mind, blah, blah, blah. But then he kind of fucks you a little bit because he goes, well, did he?
Yeah.
Because the mother's talking at the end and she's like, I'm just going to sit here quietly. Mm. I'll blame him, but he like.
Very, so it's almost like, yeah. So they kind of do the two ending. They do this kind of supernatural ending. Yeah. But they also kind of explain that he's, you know, psychologically damaged as well. But
then is he? Is it a ploy? So he doesn't go to jail and he just goes to the sentence?
I have heard that Psycho 2 is actually quite good.
Is that? I've not seen that.
It's quite late on. I think it's 81 or 82, maybe, I think it was made. So it's quite a while, or maybe even later, actually. But I hear it's actually quite underrated. I don't know about the ones after, but I've heard Psycho 2's.
Did Vaughn do?
He did the remake, yeah.
Was it the remake?
Yeah, he did the remake, the shot-for-shot remake, which was, I think the only added.
Always needed.
The only added thing they changed was that we see him masturbating, looking through a peephole.
And, oh, yeah.
I think that's the only difference. That's the only difference.
Seen it.
There you go. You remember that bit.
But do you actually? Sorry, not to go off on too much of a tangent. But do you see? Because obviously the beauty about Psycho was that you don't see any wounds.
Yes. Yeah. No penetration. No.
Yeah. You don't see the knife going into her. Do you see it happen in the?
I'll be honest. I've not. Maybe? I don't know.
We'll do a Hitchcock.
Yeah, we'll do a Hitchcockian compendium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I love Hitchcock, and I should really watch more of his stuff as well. I think that's a great idea. Let's do that. Let's do that next. another interesting thing about this was that the film was shot chronologically.
Oh, okay. Any particular reason why?
Well, because the set was to be blown up.
Well, yeah. how do we get around this?
Oh, God, why did we film the end of the star? Oh, no. Oh, why did I do this? You want to just... Hey, Gladiator, do you want to give us some money? You made some money.
Because like I said earlier, it does go to town. And well, someone goes to town. I don't know if it is Kevin Bacon in a disability, well, in a green So
one of the other issues I had, the film just does end. It kind of just, you see he dies, spoilers, he does die. But that then they kind of climb out and it's like, oh, we're just going to go in an ambulance now. Bye. That's the kind of, I thought there might be more of a kind of resolution.
Well, I can't remember who quoted this, but the end of a film should feel like the beginning of a new film. And
yeah.
Maybe it was Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
I can actually see that because the next film would be The Court Case.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Have you even played that?
It was like, and they go, we didn't see anything.
Yeah.
That's how they get out.
We can blame it on him. Yeah.
Another one of my favorite. Oh no, that was it. That was what I was going to talk about. There's a bit where she escapes. I love the bit where she's locked in the freezer.
Yeah. And I was like, how the heck did she get out of here? I was like, magnets.
Yes, electromagnets. She's a scientist. It's fine. It's feasible. I love that she gets out, and then when she does get out, she gets this flamethrower, very, very Ellen Ripley. And she's like, he's like, oh, goodbye, and he's like, see you later, and she's like, nah, slide tackles into the elevator, and burns him, and she doesn't just like do a little burn, she keeps going and going and going. The only issue I have with this is that he sheds his skin. We're talking about like third degree burns here from that flamethrower.
This is why we're talking about. Is he superhuman?
Yeah, so is there a superpower to it?
Yeah, because, what happened? Because he's walking around, he's obviously burned.
Yeah, he pulls off the mask, he pulls off his clothes.
Yeah, because obviously
and you can see
it
the burns.
Fuses to him.
It's the
plastic covering that sticks to his skin.
Yeah, and that would be boiling as well, so it's pulling that off.
It just ripped his skin off.
But then he just walks away and it kind of all just, like, falls off. And
Is he not back?
No, so what happens? They kind of, it's quite clever, they kind of pepper this in early on that when they shock the ape, when they do the paddles and the
defibrillator.
Defibrillator, yeah. When they shock the ape, the ape comes fully visible.
Yeah.
And they do it a little bit with him, I think, when they shock him. So I think electricity has something to do with it. So she electrocutes him, she pulls a wire out, jabs it, and then he becomes partially visible. So I think somewhere...
That's how... Oh, yeah, so he did shed his skin.
So, yeah, he kind of shed his skin, and then he's invisible again. And then she electrocutes him. And then, again, the burns go, but I think you can kind of see his visibility flickering, like him coming in and out of visibility, like the ape did, if you watch the start. Yeah. Again, you have to kind of pay quite close attention to see that that's something... Because they don't mention it. They don't go, electricity makes them visible for
which
sure.
Which I'm glad, because I do hate it when that...
They ham it on. A lot of exposition. Yeah, this is the reason why we're doing this. We have to say this because we have to say this, and this information is for later. Yeah, we have to get you to know everything before it ends. But yeah, so that kind of explains it. But yeah, the skin shedding, maybe he is partly, maybe he's becoming something else. Maybe he's, that as well, yeah. And we don't know what's in those serums because they don't really explain it. They're like, no, the quantum phase shifting is, sure, whatever science-y shit you want to come up with. He's just invisible, all right? He's just invisible. I wanted to ask, if you were going to make an invisible woman, man, child, animal, invisible lions, if you were going to make that film, what would your kind of take on it be?
Excellent. I'm doing a bit of writing. If I take that concept of invisibility, maybe I do love horror. Obviously, it's my favorite genre.
I think it does have. I think it's probably one of its roots is its strength is probably in horror in some form.
Yeah, I mean, it might be going down a bit of a Freddy versus Jason kind of route, but if you put an invisible person in to kill killers,
okay,
or to stop. Oh, no, actually, so it wouldn't be horror, really, but you could, give someone the power to, of invisibility, to fight crime almost, but, maybe it's very specific for, rapists or something like fucking people around.
Like, they could be, like, an eyewitness.
Yeah.
And they could use that testimony to get...
Or serial killers.
Yeah, that's cool. I've got one. I've got a hot take. So, similar premise. Scientists trying to figure out... they're not trying to figure out invisibility. They're trying to cure like a skin problem or a skin disease or an infection or a deformity, let's say like on a genetic level or something.
Yeah.
And they accidentally stumble upon invisibility like by accident. It's not like they're not planning for it. You know, I haven't got infrared goggles or anything like that. And the person they give it to has always been noticed, always been made fun of, taken advantage of, you know, just like marginalized by society because they were hideous or they didn't look beautiful. And now they finally got what they want. They don't want to be seen. So, it you know, it makes them go mad with power. They're like, I can live my life now. I can do whatever I want. I can do all these things. And then they kind of maybe go on a kind of killing spree.
Do you know what? That's reminding me of, I watched a film recently on, I think I saw it on Sky. It was called Rabbit. And it's a remake.
David Cronenberg, yeah.
Yeah, but it's the Soska sisters.
Oh, is it?
Who are amazing. But that's very similar. She gets disfigured in an accident, the protagonist. And it's body horror kind of film. It's like, it's quite graphic to look at, but she gets disfigured all over. You can kind of see her teeth up here and stuff. And so she goes to this clinic that will, like, we're going to make you beautiful again. And it's...
Sounds very Cronenbergian.
Yeah. So the doctor's like the treater and she looks absolutely, completely back to normal. Mm. But then she starts getting hungry, like, for meat.
Yeah.
And it then turns into kind of like a rabies kind of storyline. So it's kind of similar, like, with how you started there, but that's very funny because you've not seen the film.
No, I've not. I've got the original as well, which I still need to watch. And that is planned somewhere down the line.
But yeah, it's cool. The Soska sisters have they have a really cool team.
I think I need to see more of their stuff as well, definitely.
Yeah, American Mary, some of my faves.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I did really like this quote. It's really stupid, but they were like, well, where have you been? They're like, where's the redhead, the short redhead girl? It's like, where's she gone? Because they're trying to save the Grunberg. They're trying to save him. And they're like, she went to get blood. She went alone. And he's like, yeah, he was dying. And they went, he's dead. I was like, that's quite funny.
it was quite funny, actually. Because he did look like he was moving in one shot. And then it's like, he's dying. He's dead.
He's dead. Yeah. It's like, no.
But yeah,
I'm just trying to think if there's anything else I want to mention, really.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think we've mentioned a lot. Oh, there was talk that apparently that Robert Downey Jr. was supposed to be cast as Josh Brolin's role or Kevin Bacon's role. So he was in talks, apparently, but there's not... Can't find that confirmed anywhere, but could just be whispers. But apparently Ed Norton and...
Oh, I could see Ed.
Guy Pearce were also considered for the Hollow Man. So yeah, I can imagine like an Edward Norton, but I know he's quite difficult to work with. He very much has to have his own way a little bit, I think, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Like, he took over like directing of American History X and stuff like that.
I could see Robert Downey Jr. playing Josh Brolin's character, bringing that comic,
because
he survives as well at the end, doesn't he? So you've got to make him a nice guy.
Yeah.
Because, like, otherwise, no one would root for him.
I think I've definitely always had a little bit of a crush for Elizabeth Shue.
Oh, really?
I saw her in Cocktail, and then I think Adventures in Babysitting as well.
Of course.
When she was in a prime, she's still very beautiful in this. Don't get me wrong. But I was like, when she was in her prime, and I was like, oh yes, very nice, very nice.
My little sister used to watch Adventures in Babysitting, or like consistently during children. And just go, watch this film three times
over it. Yeah.
But
my sister's was like Matilda.
6 or 7. Oh gosh. Yeah. I think she must have been like 6 or 7 or something. But I, like, honestly, throughout the whole film, it's like, a bit of an action, there's some violence. But at the end, she's like, don't fuck with the babysitter. Like, hey,
oh. 80s. 80s.
What is that?
Oh, I forgot about that bit.
She said, duck, ducking.
Oh, you ducker.
Yeah.
You bad, you mother ducker. I always, that's the thing with some of these films. Like, I was thinking about doing a podcast on like inappropriate, like PG movies.
Yeah.
Like things like Poltergeist and.
Oh, yeah.
Because that, I was like, that's got PG rating, but it's kind of not.
No.
Yeah. The bit where he's pulling his face off.
That's gross, that bit. I love Poltergeist.
Classic.
What's his name? It was the dad in it. He's in...
Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, Craig T. Nelson. Yeah, he's been hilarious.
He's the dad in Incredibles as well.
Yes, he is.
Mr. Incredible.
He's in Once Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
He's in a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's just, it's really funny. God, was it PG?
That was a PG, yeah.
Oh, really?
But then even like Indiana Jones, like those early Indiana Jones films, like the guy.
The one where he gets his heart taken.
Yeah, that's PG. Yeah. That's PG. Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. Even Ghostbusters has a scene where one of them dreams about getting a blowjob from a ghost.
God, which one's?
First one.
Which was it?
It's a Dan Aykroyd's character who dreams. It's very brief, but he dreams about having it because he's there and he's like the zip it's floating above her. Then she's invisible. Zip comes down, flies open, and then he goes ooh like that, makes a face.
Oh my gosh!
But, yeah, yeah, forget about that. There you go.
You should definitely look into a few more of those.
Yeah, they're quite funny. I think I've already got a list somewhere, but yeah. But yeah, I've got a few listener comments before we go. Let's have a quick look at them. Is there anything else you want to say before I go into these, or you got anything else you want to mention?
No. I'm very excited to see the Invisible.
Yes,
Man.
Me too. But you enjoyed this. I enjoyed this.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's
definitely recommend.
Yeah, I think it's worth a watch. I think if you're looking for something very similar to The Invisible Man, I think this is your go-to.
Yeah.
Good cast, good action, good music, good performances.
Yeah.
Yeah. The effects good as well.
Yeah.
I think all around it's good film. And it should be remembered. So listener comments. So this is Paul Meller from Twitter at The Meller Geek. I saw this one at the cinema when it came out and I remember it being okay, but I've never been back to it. I think it may look dated if I rewatched it today, so it'll be good to hear your thoughts. So we don't think it looks that dated.
No.
I think it still holds up for the most part. I think because they spent $50 million on the special effects at that time, I think that's what makes it.
Obviously, you can tell it's CGI.
Yeah, of course.
Because how the frig else would they have done it? But, exactly.
And that's probably why we haven't had that many Invisible Men films since.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Invisible People films. Yeah. I think it's because it's quite tricky to do. Let's have a look at this one. So Ben from Nerd Chatting. That's Ben at Ben_NerdChat. Ah, great little movie. Great premise and special effects. However, slightly falls into the slasher territory in the last reel. Yeah.
It does.
But it's not necessarily a bad thing. I like a good slasher. Superb performance by Kevin Bacon portraying not only a man you cannot see, but also a man with no discernible moral code.
Yeah.
Therefore, becoming a pure monster. Yeah, I think he is a movie monster. The original Invisible Man is part of the Universal Monsters, those classic monsters.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's a monster. Dan Keatis at DL Keatis. Ooh, I'll be looking forward to this one. I recall watching this in the cinema back in 2000, did a double bill with this and Mission Impossible 2.
Nice
double bill. Moving on, our biggest fan, I Am Jack's Musings at I Am Jack's Musings. It's a lesser Verhoeven, but has enough of his flourishes to make it watchable. Bonus, classic teen crush Elizabeth Shue. Yeah, just discussed. Very similar thoughts, right? But I agree, it's not one of his best, but it's definitely not one of his worst, from what I've seen. And I think there is, like you said, there is some cult enjoyment out of Verhoeven films because he kind of challenged kind of Hollywood cinema with excessive violence and excessive sex and excessive kind of satire and, you know, pointing the finger at political figures and you know, the way America is run, you know, because he's in the best position to do that. Being a foreigner, he can look at the issues and the problems and point them out. So I think he's a great man for that. But yeah, I think we're done. I think we've covered. Thank you so much for coming. It's been a lot of fun. Hope you've enjoyed yourself. And we'll do something very soon. Maybe a Hitchcockian, Hitchcockian. Maybe we could do Psycho 2. Maybe we could have a look at that.
Yeah,
I can see that because I've not seen it. You've not seen it.
And Psycho 2 is not the remake.
No. So Psycho 2 stars Anthony Perkins. So the original.
Okay.
So, and I think he starred in 3 and 4 as well, but I don't think they're as well received as 2.
Right.
But obviously it's not as good as Psycho, but it's not too bad apparently. Or we could watch one of the lesser known Hitchcock films. There's quite a few. He made a lot.
He made
a lot of films.
My mum made me watch so many. Maybe.
You watch this.
But I think I saw plenty.
I've got Psycho. I think I've got Rear Window.
The birds.
Yeah. Have you heard about the bird war? Best line in that film. Old lady.
Yeah, well, that bit with the guy with his eyes pecked out. That,
yeah.
I'm just getting all these flashbacks of films that my mum made me watch.
Mum, why? Why? So much swearing. So many ghost blowjobs. Oh no. Right, well, that is it. Thank you very much for joining us again, and go out and see The Invisible Man. Bye bye. Thank you.